Libby's number 23 was one of the thousands of wooden sailboats manned by two-man crews, back when the Bristol Bay Fleet was totally at the mercy of the wind and the tides.
Not only did you have to be a really good fisherman in this era, you had to be a darn good sailor.
John Branson is the historian for Lake Clark National Park in Port Allsworth. He says you had to be a skilled sailor back then because any little mistake could cost you dearly.
Because when you were trying to deliver your fish to the scow and you went, if you missed it, you might have to wait 12 hours till the tide changed to come back around.
The result could be a boat full of spoiled fish, or could be much worse.
Because there was, you know, there's a section of the Quijack Bay called Dead Man Sands. If they went dry in that shallow bay and then when the riptide came back in and if they were sideways, broadside to the oncoming tide with the big wind, they could swamp, and many did.
This, says Branson, is part of the reason for the paint job on this boat. It's painted a butterscotch brownish orange.
And every cannery had their own color scheme, so this is Libby's orange, you know, because they didn't have radios to communicate with the superintendent. Could look out with binoculars and see his, he could identify his boats out there fishing by, you know, visual, by the color.
In this way, the boss would know if all of his boats were accounted for or if he had to send out a monkey boat to tow some crew to safety. Most Bristol Bay fishermen during this era were from Italy and Northern Europe. According to the book Sailing for Salmon, there could be fierce rivalry between the nationalities as they tried to outfish each other. And judging by the two different types of stoves that are on display on the double ender, it seems they couldn't agree on the best way to cook, either.
The Italians favored the Santa Maria stove. It was a coal burner where they would make their cioppino and different chowders, you know, and spaghetti and stuff, and they would get the food from the cannery. Then the Swedes, Norwegian people, and everyone else liked those Primus Optimus stoves.
A mealtime staple for many, says Branson, were hardtack biscuits, the forerunner of pilot bread.
The Italian word for it is galette. If you think you could just chew that like you do a pilot bread, forget it. You'll have to go see a dentist. That'll break your teeth, literally. That is cast iron stuff.
Of course, with just a tent for shelter, the food had to be tough, as did the fishermen and their gear. Long before Grundins and neoprene were invented, fishermen would wear oilskins, an old-fashioned type of rain jacket.
And they would have to put Vaseline around their wrist because it was rigid and it would chafe, you know.
Among the hardy men who manned the Libby's number 23 was a schoolteacher named John Corray.
And he's the man that brought the boat up from Graveyard Cannery right here. Cogeong, Libby's Cogeong, or Graveyard Cogeong.
Using a small gas engine in 1953, Corray brought the boat up the Quijack to where he and his wife were teaching school in Pedro Bay. By the next year, they'd hauled the double-ender on a trailer from Iliamna over the New Halen Portage Road to the upper New Halen River. That's how it got, eventually, to Lake Clark, where it was used for recreation and to haul cargo by several different families. By Branson's estimate, the Libby's number 23 is one of only 10 or so museum-quality double-enders left in existence. A few years ago, he successfully got it listed on the National Register of Historic Places. It's the only such listing, says Branson, from the nation's last great wild salmon fishery. Reporting in Port Allsworth, I'm Hannah Colton.